VentureCast.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
This is Entrepreneurs Exposed, where we speak with all kinds of founders and creators doing amazing things in business and beyond. The following is my conversation with Dr. Stacy Gonzalez. Dr. Stacy Gonzalez is a teacher, advisor, coach, and consultant. For over 2 decades, Stacy served as an award-winning executive leader in some of the largest school districts in the state of Illinois. Now, Stacy is the founder of SG Creative Connections, where she guides leaders to clarify their expertise, craft, an influential brand, and connect with new opportunities. In this episode, we discuss Stacy's late foray into entrepreneurship, strategies and tactics she's used to grow her business on LinkedIn, her personal story, including how she married the same man twice, and much, much more. So with that intro out of the way, let's get to the show. Here is Dr. Stacy Gonzalez. I was perusing through your LinkedIn and I stumbled upon something that you posted, and I had to reread it just to make sure that I was getting it right. So you married in 1998, you divorced in 2015, and then you remarried the same man in 2021?
That's right. Yeah, that was an unexpected turn of events, that's for sure. I don't think anybody plans on remarrying the person that they divorced. Prior to the separation, my brother-in-law died by suicide. And that took a shock through the whole family system. I have a very close family. And so I really started to reevaluate my life. There were no signs. There were no, and as a matter of fact, my sister is a counselor, right? So like very self-aware, but we didn't see this coming. And so that kind of turned my world upside down. I looked at our children and felt that they were many examples of my husband and I, and they were not communicating. They were fighting a lot. There was just a lot of bad vibes. And so about 6 months after that, I just looked at my husband and I said, we need to separate. We're not parenting well. Our children are suffering. Our relationship is not where it needs to be. And so I left and we ended up getting divorced. And I took the kids. I left with the children.
How old were your kids at the time?
One was entering high school and one was entering sixth grade. And so I moved back to the community where I grew up, where my parents and my sisters, and wanted to help my sister as well with, she had 3 children at the time when her husband passed and her children were 3, 5, and 7. And so I just felt this need to kind of come back to kind of my family of origin. And my husband at the time was like, that's not going to work for me. That's fine. You can take the kids. I'm going to move down the street. And so we bought a townhouse literally down the block and we had the kids week on, week off is how we kind of did it. And I said to him, that's fine if you want to live here, but we need to co-parent. We need to go to therapy. We need to figure out how to parent these children in a way that helps them have a really solid foundation, even though we're going through this terrible thing. And so we ended up in co-parenting therapy, which we really didn't know was marriage therapy, essentially. And the therapist, about 6 months in, we looked at each other and we were like, holy shit, we still love each other. And then we ended up getting remarried in 2021.
What was the impact to the kids and how did they react when you guys got back together?
They weren't happy. My daughter she's not anymore, but at the time she was like, oh, you guys, this time dad's going to leave you. You're going to get a payback. I don't know why you guys are doing this. So it took a lot of really hard work to get to a really healthy place.
Mm-hmm. You know, and you mentioned your brother-in-law and I saw that post. You were very public about that situation. You posted about it on LinkedIn. It got a lot of engagement. For you, Was that a difficult thing to do, to share a story like that publicly?
So funny. That day I made that post when my brother-in-law Mark passed away. My sister didn't want to live in the same house. And so she ended up buying a new house and my parents built a house next door. So my parents and my sister built houses next door so my parents could help my sister with the littles more closely. That day I had been visiting. I go, we're all very close. We're about 2 miles from each other. And I was over there when I got in my car and I literally wrote that post on my phone while sitting in the driveway. It just really poured out of me from having spent time with them. No expectations. That was a really big moment.
Speaking of big moments and posts, you had a big viral post that you shared back in March, and you began with a statement about leaving your $180,000-a-year job, even though you were doing everything right. Were you surprised that post resonated with so many people?
I think when you are learning and you're constantly evolving in your content creation, you're trying to find the things that resonate and hit with people and you don't necessarily know. You have a sense that like numbers and people starting talking about money is certainly going to compel people one way or the other, right? But I was surprised about that. And you'll see in my content, like then I use that as I continue to build and grow because that's a content creation strategy, right? You see what resonates with your audience. You see what people are picking up on. And then you think like, how can I serve people who were in places and spaces that I used to be, whether it's through my story, whether it's through some of the things that I will give to people in the DMs, whatever that looks like. So yeah, I'm surprised and I'm not surprised at the same time.
And you kind of walk through your own experience about how you did it. And my understanding is decided to do this on a whim. You went to your office, you cleared it out one night. It was not strategically thought out, if that makes sense. It's not as if you had something to fall back on. So just share what was going on back then.
Something inside of me knew. I had a boss that at the time I'd see a message or a text from her, I'd immediately get sick to my stomach. I'm like, this is not the way it's supposed to be. This is not healthy. My daughter had suffered some trauma. She was working at a local pizza place. Front end, just a little stand-up shop, no restaurant or anything, just come get your pizza. A delivery driver had come back intoxicated and assaulted her. And so we were going through some legal things, which I had never experienced in my life. And so I was just at such a place where, going back to my brother-in-law, Mark, I wasn't suicidal in the sense of like I wanted to end my life, but I didn't have the zest for life and I didn't want to live. And I knew that there was a part of me that I had been maybe dismissing. And so it was time for me to kind of find that soulful inner space. Who is Stacey Gonzalez and what is the contribution she's going to make to the world?
If you are not independently wealthy and you are a parent and you have dependents, how do you just walk away from a near $200,000-a-year job without any clarity on the financial piece?
Well, I'll tell you this. I had saved 6 months of runway. So on a very practical level, can't remember if it was $60,000 or $80,000 that I just knew I was going to use. I knew I had enough networking relationships to be able to do some consulting out the gate. So I had some consulting clients immediately, like it within the next 4 to 5 months after I had left. What I found, though, was my network, my consulting clients were all within the same industry. And that industry for me no longer felt like the place where I was supposed to be. So early when I first left, I was finding myself on a 1099 versus a W-2, but everything felt the same. Bureaucratic, red tape, nonsense, political barriers. And so I was like, this isn't it for me. I've got to figure out where I belong.
1099, just for listeners who are in Canada, you are serving as a contractor now, not as an employee. Is that the difference here?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
When you left, you also mentioned that you took some steps, one of which was hiring a coach. Coaching is one of the noisiest areas in the service space right now, in my opinion. So I've got a two-part question for you, Stacey. One, how did you find the right coach? And two, looking back, do you really think that you needed one?
I still have my same coach. Actually, he's doing a retreat in 2 weeks that I've never done, like a 2-day full-on retreat. for 8 hours. So I found my coach on LinkedIn. I saw his comments on somebody else's post, engaged with him in the comments, which then moved to the DMs. And on our very first call, I had no idea how much he was. I had no idea anything. And I was like, listen, I know I need to work with you. When can we start? And how much is it? Like, the energy was right. Timing was right. So now it's just tell me how much it costs. And I just knew. And that relationship has completely changed my life.
Wow. For those that might be thinking about coaching and trying to understand, like, how do I best find a coach on LinkedIn? Is it as simple as sort of chemistry, the way you describe it?
So when I got to know him, he had spent 4 years living in a Buddhist monastery in his 20s. I just was kind of fascinated by that. Some of his visualization work, his meditation work really began to transform the way I think about my life and see myself. And so when we think about like product market fit, right, there's like coach person fit, right? Coach client fit. You're kind of looking for that coach client fit. And if you are thinking about working with a coach, interview lots of people. Find the people who have, he's a professional coach. He's certified. He does training all the time. He coaches other coaches. So this is not just somebody who left their career and said, I'm going to be a coach now. And there's a lot of noise. You're absolutely right about that.
At this point, have you firmly come to terms with the fact that you are an entrepreneur? And how do you think about and describe what you guys do now?
The entrepreneurship journey feels like a discovery of self that I bring others along with me as I grow. What do you feel?
It's multi-pronged. One is, from a practical standpoint, you're writing yourself a paycheck. You're not relying on somebody else to deliver a paycheck. So you are writing yourself a check. Two is, you're building something, right? You're a creator, ultimately. And I think that's probably the hardest piece for people to come to terms with, is that idea that you have to hold yourself accountable. There is nobody else. But for you, do you feel like you've come to terms with sort of the accountability side of it, that you are your own boss?
That part, yes, but it took me a long time to get out of a victim mentality, that I was expecting other people to come to my rescue in a way, right? I had two assistants when I was working who would do things for me that I could delegate to. So it wasn't a matter necessarily of being accountable to myself. It was more or less of, I didn't even know what things I should be more accountable about. I didn't know what the right things were. The for-profit free market space of ideas. I mean, the whole world is your oyster. It was almost so overwhelming because I was standing there looking like, I could do this, I could do this, I could do this, I could do this. Who am I really? What do I really love? How do I take that 20 years and translate that into something meaningful for people that connects and resonates? I feel like I'm even still on that journey.
Okay, so let's tackle the second part of the question, which is really about what you're doing now with SG Creative Connections. How do you describe your value proposition to the market you serve?
Well, the value proposition is, we will help you connect creatively where you're currently at and where you want to go. I always wanted to be in the marketing space. When I was in education, we don't have marketing. We have PR. It's really PR. It's not really forward thinking. And so I felt like marketing was this creative space. And so being able to help people figure out who they are, their messaging, how to take their expertise like I have and turn it into a profitable business has been a really joy. And it's personal. Everybody has different experiences. And so how to help them figure out how they want to leverage those in new ways to build and bring new opportunities has been really fun.
Are you helping people to discover their brand voice? Are you helping people position themselves online? Are you driving demand or building a pipeline? Like, where do you best fit, do you think?
It depends on where the person enters into the conversation. So some people come in and they already have a little bit of a foundation built, which is great. And so we can help them position their offer. A lot of times people can't read the label on their own jar per se, right? So it's really helping them see who they can be. It's easy for me. I can listen to you. I can look at you and be like, okay, let's position you like this. Why don't we try this? Let's think about this. You had these 15 comments. The key word in these comments said this is what people are really resonating with. So taking the creative piece that I can see just intuitively, I'm pretty intuitive when it comes to just understanding people. but I'm also very analytical and I like to look at data and I like facts and figures and numbers. And so what have you done so far and how has it worked for you? And let's see how we can leverage that. This is a little bit of both.
Are you platform agnostic or are you specific to LinkedIn? Where do you find that you're having the most success?
I only create on LinkedIn. Anything else, number one, would be too overwhelming to try to create that much content. LinkedIn's the bread and butter if you're trying to really build business and you don't have any other. If you've already got an Instagram that's running for you, great, or Facebook, great. But if you don't, we always say build on LinkedIn. People are there looking to connect professionally.
Mm-hmm. And you've had success there, right? You've had 4 years of experience building content there. You've built your following on LinkedIn. A lot of those posts that you've shared have gone viral. Do you feel like this year things have changed on the platform from a marketing perspective? And if so, what are those changes?
LinkedIn is late to the creator game, but it's great for those of us who want to like present in a professional way who we are. And so I think somebody just showed me they are doing some like short video kind of right, like shorts or TikTok kind of stuff. They're piloting that right now. But I think LinkedIn is trying. They've invested into creator cohorts. So they understand that there is a need in the market for creators on LinkedIn. And so they're trying to nurture that. I think if you're in business and you're looking to grow an audience, a following, get yourself known, LinkedIn's the place, especially because you can't BS as much. Your receipts are connected. People can see where you work, who you're connected to. They can back channel in the DMs. I hear all the times from recruiters that people back channel on us, meaning I'm applying for a role or I'm applying to work for somebody. They see who I'm connected with. They know somebody. They're going to ask about you. So you want, I think that's a good thing. I think that's a really great thing. Because if I am who I say I am, you should be able to DM anybody that I'm connected to and get the right story.
What's your LinkedIn content strategy, Stacey? Like, when do you post? How often do you post? Is there a specific format, either short form, long form, that you use?
Hook is everything. Hook is 99% of the content. So I spend a lot of time working, reworking hooks. My goal is always to post every day at 7:17 a.m. Central Time, 15 minutes before and 15 minutes after. I'll engage with people that I either emulate, aspire to be like, or I see something inside of them that is relevant for me.
You're commenting on their stuff also?
That's right.
Is that what you mean? Mm-hmm.
That's right. Yeah, we build out engagement strategy. So I use an engagement strategy. It's the same kind of thing we do with our clients. So the first thing I would recommend for anybody looking to build their personal brand is to find individuals that you emulate, individuals that you resonate with their content. They've built a brand following. Those people you want to follow, there's something about them that you want. Essentially, as you start to comment, you can bring their audience over to you. So that's step one. The second type of people you want to engage with are people who are adjacent to you. Maybe they serve different clients, but they do similar things to you, but maybe in a different industry, in a different niche. So those are people who are like your peers. You want to engage with them, second. And then the third is people that you want to mentor that maybe reach out to you or comment. They're never going to necessarily work with you, but they're going to follow you throughout your journey. I have people now who will say to me, oh my gosh, I remember 4 years ago when you were still working in the district and schools and I was following you then, right? And so those people will probably never work with you, but they'll come along on your journey. Think about your content in these three buckets: top of funnel, middle of funnel, bottom of funnel. Top of funnel is that content where it's got universal appeal. It's going to attract a lot of people. You asked me about my brother-in-law. Probably everybody's been touched by suicide in some way. That's going to attract top of funnel. That's going to attract people, but it's not necessarily going to convert into followers or clients necessarily. It might convert to followers. It probably won't convert to clients. Number two is middle of funnel. Middle of funnel is kind of where you showcase who you are, what you do, how you do it in ways that are relatable to your audience. You pull out the problems and then the promise of the transformation that can occur when they work with you, like your real stories of things that have happened. And then bottom of funnel is like your offer. This is where you put out, you'll get the least amount of likes, the least amount of comments, the least amount of hits, reshares. But this bottom of funnel is where people will reach out to you in the DMs on the back end because they really understand and they want that transformation that you're offering.
So like on the bottom of funnel offer piece, can you just share an example? Like, are you attaching a hard call to action to a checkout page, to a book a call page? Like, what does a bottom of funnel post look like? What's the structure?
That's exactly right. You are attaching it to a call to action that converts immediately. You may have an article or a 5-sequence email lesson or a lead magnet. That's what it is. You may have some sort of a something that they're going to get, they're going to download, and then they're going to take those steps. It could be inviting them to a free webinar. I mean, there's so many different ways you can think of bottom of funnel. It could literally just be book a call with me. Here's my link, right? It could be that simple. Bottom of funnel, you have to be careful. We are in a trust economy. People do not want to feel like you're just selling them. That's icky. That's cringy, right? As the kids say. So you want to be real careful with those. I use them very infrequent. And when I feel like I've got something that I'm really ready to pull.
Do you use any automation tools to do any outbound connecting with folks on LinkedIn?
So here's the thing about me. I do zero outbound. In 2024, I completely pivoted. I'm like, I'm going to just create content and wait for people to come to me. And it's worked. It's actually made my life so much more peaceful inside.
Look, I think that approach will resonate with a lot of folks. And also, just as a small caveat or asterisk, I know that LinkedIn is getting very strict about outbound, period, and cracking down on folks that are using third-party tools to engage with folks, to connect with folks, and even shutting down accounts in certain instances without notice.
It's icky. Like, we want to add value and be real people to real people. So yeah, I agree.
When you say the hook is everything, what makes for a good hook?
A great hook contains an open loop. And what I mean by an open loop is it gives you a teaser idea that makes you want to know more. It's relatable in some way or intriguing enough in some way that the person wants to click see more. People aren't going to read paragraphs. That's why I like to stick with short lines that tell a story and can flow, that people can follow. And the hooks practice. So what I'll do is I'll repurpose content all the time. I'll look at what content I had 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago. I'll redo the hook. I've got some new insights, some new energy, some new ideas. I'll rework the content just a little bit, but I'm getting to a place where I can repurpose my content pretty seamlessly. But don't get me wrong, creating content every day is still a lot of work.
It's a ton of work. Is there any rhyme or reason around the 7:17 central time thing?
Yeah, I've had this fun number. I had a high school teacher, and on the day she was teaching reverse psychology, she was standing at the door holding forget 717. So it just became this fun thing. And my daughter and I, over the years, it'd be like, oh, 717. It just kind of became this little fun little game.
What about like the spirit of the content itself? So you have shared a lot of vulnerable things. We're in this sort of like era of vulnerability, it seems, where people are basically sharing their entire lives online. I don't necessarily agree with it, but your own perspective on this, like, do you feel like there's a point at which you can be too vulnerable where it gets a little bit weird or uncomfortable?
You're making a great point and bringing up a really good topic of conversation. So if you're going to do it, which I like, I feel like it's mine. Nobody can take it. You started the conversation. Tell me about this thing that happened between you and your husband. You have to be really secure in who you are and be able to back up anything that you write. It has to be 100% true. And I would also recommend you have to have worked through the things so you can effectively communicate what that story is about and how it's gotten you to this point today.
I want to ask you just for some parenting advice, because I've been thinking a lot about this recently, and you have plenty of academic accolades, credentials. At the same time, I mean, I went to university, I got a master's degree after. I mean, I did the corporate thing. I've been an entrepreneur for the better part of 15 years, but I did experience the corporate world, and I'm actually pretty conflicted about the value of a college degree at this point. And I got lots of different things happening in my head when I'm thinking about it. But
do you think there's value in the structure and the, like, there is a sentiment of adulting that happens in college, like learning to adult?
Yeah, I agree. And I think part of that is the experience of leaving the nest and going away to college and being on your own. I think that's almost like 50% of the value. And you saw, I think, a lot of the questioning or a lot of the cynicism around the value of colleges and universities bubbled to the surface during COVID when 1.6 billion people moved to online learning. And colleges and universities are getting pummeled as a result. And we're just coming out of that right now. But I think I agree with that. 50% of the value of a college degree is experiencing college on your own and leaving home. If you're going to go to a local college at home, are you getting that same value? I don't know. I think liberal arts is a really scary place to be from an ROI perspective, to pay those kinds of tuitions to exit with sort of a bachelor's in history. I think there's a lot of value in sort of the STEM track still. We're sort of like experiencing a pretty interesting paradigm shift around colleges and universities right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
When did your kids get smartphones?
6th, 7th, or 8th grade, somewhere in there, maybe.
Looking back, do you feel like you got the timing right around that? Would you do anything differently?
Well, we did a lot of things like signing contracts, putting the phone away, right? Like, we had them pretty on lockdown. There wasn't the tools available. I think there are a lot of more tools now available for parents. It's interesting you ask about that, because when you look at all these Silicon Valley guys and gals, none of them let their kids have phones. They know to hold that stuff back from them. And I think that's an important lesson for those of us who aren't necessarily in that space. Have you given your kids phones yet?
So my eldest is in grade 6, and she has my wife's old phone, but she doesn't have her own SIM card. So we see all the communication that happens via text and otherwise. And she has no data plan, but she can still, I mean, these kids are smart. She'll go to a local Starbucks and hook up to the Wi-Fi so she can get data and get on TikTok or Snapchat. I think of the phone as like the, I'm going to age myself here as a Gen Xer. I think of the phone as the Zippo lighter and the social media platforms as the cigarette. And you need to be careful when you hand over the lighter to your child because you don't know how they're going to use it.
When you said that, I then thought, well, is it a cigarette? Is it a joint? Is it a candle? Is it a grill? I don't know. But I think the main thing is I was never afraid of conversations with my kids around pornography or illicit content that they might experience. I remember the day my daughter told me what she saw on the phone, and we talked about it. And so I think that is the piece that my parents' generation, they didn't know how to talk about some of these candid conversations. And we as parents, you said Gen X, I'm a Gen Xer. That's where we have to do things a little bit differently and not be afraid to talk about things that our parents weren't comfortable talking to us about.
SG Creative Connections for more. Stacey, where can people follow you online?
Best place is on LinkedIn. That's where I spend most of my time. And so Stacey Gonzalez, EDD, I think is my total like name there. But you'll find me if you put in Stacey Gonzalez, and I'd love to connect. And I'm here to add value. So like, even if you don't want to work with me, send me a DM, ask me questions. I'll do my best to send you a video, send you a response, and help you any way I can.
Stacey, it was a pleasure talking to you today. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you, Adam. This was wonderful.
That's it for today. Thanks so much for listening. Entrepreneurs Exposed is brought to you by Scriberbase. Build your subscription business and thrive. More at Scriberbase.com. If you like what you heard today, don't forget to download and subscribe wherever you get your audio. It helps our audience find us. You can also visit us at glow.fm/E2 to become a supporter. Until next time, make today count with whatever it is you're working on.
Welcome to Tuning Into Sound Wellbeing, where we harmonize your mind, body, and soul. I'm Amanda, your sound therapy expert.
And I'm Stephen, the curious explorer uncovering the mysteries of sound.
Together we explore vibrations, frequencies, and the power of sound therapy and tuning forks.
Discover ancient wisdom, reduce stress, and tune into a healthier life. Subscribe to Tuning Into Sound Wellbeing today.
Introducing the Deep Leadership Podcast. Leadership is a people business. That's the philosophy of your podcast host, John Rennie. As a former submarine officer who spent 22 years leading businesses in corporate America before starting his own manufacturing business, he knows that leadership matters.
Leadership matters.
Deep Leadership is real-world, actionable leadership advice from John and his expert guests. Become a leader worth following. Subscribe today.
Electric Acid. Electric Acid. Electric Acid.